you know, he would surrender without calling it that, and he'd probably call it a victory. No doubt he would say that this is a sign of Russian weakness, that they have to engage in this old style of power by not economic power. They're not prosperous enough to prevail in economic competition. They have to resort to crude military force. And so we should be proud of ourselves that we don't have to do that here in the West. So, you know, and it'll be against his interests to try to occupy Eastern Europe. Mark my words, it'll be really difficult to have to take care of the East Europeans, and he'll have the same problems they had in the Cold War. So so this is really a defeat for Russia that they took over Eastern Europe. You know, just the way he's characterizing Russia's taking over the Middle East as a defeat. And, but I can imagine, I mean, you know, this is what we've heard from our president before. I could actually picture him characterizing this as some sort of victory. And that Russia's going to pay for it, and we can all feel good about ourselves because we did not resort to military force and lower ourselves to the level of Vladimir Putin.
Do you think Russia will attack Poland? And if Russia does attack Poland, do you see America being involved by sending troops over to help Poland in a situation if they ever do end up being attacked?
I'm very concerned that over the next 2 years, Russia might be tempted to invade Poland, or even more ambitious. I wouldn't rule out, as I said before, that Russia would roll right to the English Channel just because they could do it, you know. When the United States was most diverse, an unfree agrarian system and a free enterprise industrial system, when we were at our most diverse, it was the most dangerous period for the existence of the United States. We almost ceased to exist because of diversity. And this was only reconciled. It had to be, the diversity was overcome. And we achieved the unity of purpose again only through a civil war that cost the lives of 750,000 Americans. So this is an enormous myth, and it's an enormous threat to us, even under the best of assumptions that these people are not going to be terrorists. Just the fact that they're so different and that they do not assimilate, and they do not want to assimilate. You're deciding to change your whole society into something different and something that will not be as good for your children as it was. They are coming from failed societies, and they want to recreate those same failed societies in Canada and the United States. And the reason those societies failed isn't just because there's a bunch of bad guys. Oh, everything would have been fine if it weren't for ISIS. No. ISIS arose because of the values that those people have that they're bringing here. And we are hearing from the immigrants who are recently arrived in Germany, in South America, elsewhere. They don't even like the societies they're settling in. They're discontented with them. They're not grateful to the people that are taking them in. And they're violent. There have been press reports now. Well, they were not declassified. They were secret German police reports. But now they've come, they've been leaked to the public light about enormous numbers of rapes, acts of robbery. And they can't even suppress them. It's not even, they're also in newspaper reports. They're in television. You know, when you see the riots that are happening at train stations and things of that, the rise of gangs, you know, women aren't safe anywhere anymore in Germany, you know. So it's not a question even of bringing in diverse cultures of people who are on good behavior, okay? Even that's bad. What we're facing is something far worse. You know, a bunch of people, these aren't women and children, they're mostly young men of military age, you know, who don't respect the societies they're coming in, who are lawless, and who are clearly bringing the seeds of terrorism, you know, to the societies in which they live. And they're going to represent a profound threat to us in a number of ways, both by being terrorists. Those who aren't terrorists, almost all of them subscribe to Sharia law and are going to want to convert our societies in directions that are really intolerable for a Judeo-Christian civilization. You know, the values can't coexist, and they're not bringing skills with them either. They're a vast army of unemployed who plan to live the good life off the social systems, the social welfare systems of the societies that they're entering. And so the overtaxed, overburdened, hardworking, typical worker in Canada and America is going to have to carry their dead weight in addition to trying to take care of their families and themselves. So this is a multi-pronged threat to our society's existence as well as to the prosperity, the long-term prosperity of our countries. The decisions we're making now, you know, will decide, you know, whether our societies are continue as they were along that historical path that historically has been some of the best and most prosperous societies that the world has ever created, or are we going to make this sharp turn downward and start balkanizing our societies and recreating them in the image of the Middle East?
In terms of the migrants who are currently in Canada and in the United States of America, to the migrants who fail to assimilate, should they be forced to leave?
Ideally, optimally, sure. I mean, if that could be engineered. I just don't know as a practical matter if that can be done. And I would have concerns as a person who, you know, because I also fear putting too much power in the hands of the state. Once you give up the power, that kind of police power to the state, you know, the resources to actually, because now we're talking about getting rid of hundreds of thousands in the United States, millions of people, and moving them out. You know, they typically say, for instance, that there's like 10 million illegals in the United States, you know. But they've been saying that for 10 or 20 years. How can there have always only be 10 million when the population has been growing? You know, I think estimates of 30 million people are more accurate, which is 10% of the population. I mean, to give the state enough power to export 30 million people, you know, that's putting more power in the hands of the state than I'm certainly comfortable with. Of course, if we're talking about those who will not be assimilated, but then who in the state gets to make that decision? Say, you know, and that alone, see, here already we arrived at this question. Even if we had it all our own way, okay, we see these people by their very existence pose a threat to freedom. Because the solutions we have to resort to are statist solutions that threaten freedom by growing the power of the state. So, you know, I think the safest thing, instead of growing state power and trying to kick these people out, you know, would be to just slam the door for decades and hope that that it'll only be a minority that can't be assimilated. That if we have several generations come up, that maybe they can be assimilated. But let's stop taking in this problem now and begin the process of assimilation now. And yeah, I mean, but I would export as many as I could. Given the law as it exists now, that I could do it legitimately, and given the resources that we have now, without greatly expanding those resources and all the rest to try to solve the problem. You know, because that's part of the, but I'm leery of the idea of growing state power to such an extent that you'd be able to try to get rid of 10% of the population, you know, because of the threat that poses to our freedom, you know, how are we going to take that power back from the state once you've given it to it?